In partnership with Piano Cleveland, the Cleveland Council on World Affairs hosted a panel discussion of the topic, Art and International Cooperation, the Bridges that Cleveland Helps Build. Panelists included André Gremillier, President and CEO of the Cleveland Orchestra, Heather Lamonides Brown, Chief Curator of the Cleveland Museum of Art, Yaron Kohlberg, President of Piano Cleveland, and international pianist Bishara Haroni. At the end, we enjoyed a brief musical performance by Duo Amal, a collaboration formed by Israeli-Palestinian pianists Yaron Kohlberg and Bishara Haroni. It was recorded live at the Music Settlement in University Circle on March 23, 2022. We hope you enjoy the forum.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. And I wanted to start this evening off by acknowledging the current geopolitical moment in which we find ourselves and the fact that we have a horrific and hugely consequential war in Ukraine. And the thought occurred to me when I was at the United Nations watching another tragedy unfold, which was the war in Syria. Sometimes in the midst of war, the most productive thing you can do is talk about how you build peace. And from my experience at the UN, the most powerful tool that we as humans have to build peace is dialogue. And so in that light, we are delighted this evening at the Cleveland Council on World Affairs to be hosting this timely conversation about a very unique and very beautiful form of dialogue, which is art. And to enlighten us on this topic, we have a truly incredible panel of Cleveland and internationally based superstars on this panel. You have their full bios in your program, so I will simply give some brief biographical details to introduce them. And starting here with our world-famous Cleveland Orchestra, André Gremillier has been its president and CEO since 2018. He began his tenure at the orchestra in 2016 as executive director. Under his leadership, the Cleveland Orchestra celebrated its 2018 centennial with critically acclaimed performances under music director Franz Welser-Möst in Cleveland, New York, Tokyo, and Vienna. A native of the province of Quebec, Mr. Gremillier served previously as managing director of the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra and president and CEO of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. Heather Lamonides Brown, who is the chief curator at the Cleveland Museum of Art, was appointed in this position in 2016. In this capacity, she oversees the collections division, which includes the curatorial, conservation, collections management, and performing arts departments, along with the Ingalls Library and Museum Archives. She joined CMA curatorial staff in 2002 and was named curator of drawings in 2010. She also currently serves as an adjunct professor in arts and art history at Case Western Reserve. And then we have Yaron Kohlberg, who is the president of Piano Cleveland, which organizes the world-renowned Cleveland International Piano Competition. Of note, to support artists during COVID-19, Piano Cleveland developed an online piano competition, Virtuoso, and their listening series, which has reached thousands of viewers worldwide. As a pianist himself, Mr. Kohlberg has won over 10 international piano competitions and performed in venues all around the globe. And finally, our panelist, Mr. Bishara Haroni, who is the founder and director of Bestival, an international festival which brings together performances of Arab, Jewish, and traditional classical music. He recently launched the B Major Foundation, which supports young musicians in the Middle East. As a soloist, Mr. Haroni has performed with major orchestras and also at venues all around the world. And together, Mr. Kohlberg and Mr. Haroni have formed Duo Amal. Of note, Amal means hope in Arabic, and this reflects their belief that music can overcome different backgrounds and cultural boundaries, and this is certainly what we're going to talk about tonight, and they will perform for us at the conclusion of our conversation. And so to start this conversation, I would like to begin with the Cleveland Orchestra and asking André, this is an international institution that happens to be located here in Cleveland, Ohio. And so the orchestra plays a huge role in bringing the world to Cleveland. And so perhaps you could share with our audience the ways in which the orchestra leverages its international reputation to bring international talent to Cleveland, whether to play in the orchestra or to perform.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I think a little bit of history is probably the right way to get into that. The Cleveland Orchestra, of course, is 104 years old now and really has been world famous since the 50s, which is a very long time. So in terms of leveraging the orchestra, it's quite honestly not very difficult anymore. The orchestra first toured outside the country in 1927, went to Cuba, of all places. That was the first international tour. Then went to Europe for the first time in 1957. That was followed in the early 70s by Asia and Australia and New Zealand. So really it's been all over the world for a very long time. The orchestra, really since the 50s, started attracting world-renowned musicians to play in the orchestra. Currently, the Cleveland Orchestra, out of 104 musicians, we have musicians who were born in 10 different countries besides the United States. You're talking about actually one musician, our oldest musician, was born in Cuba, Emilio Ginas. But we also have, you know, people from Germany, Austria, Israel, Romania. I have the list here. Ethiopia, our relatively new principal clarinet player, Effendi Youssef, was born in Ethiopia and grew up also in Canada. So South Korea, Japan, China. And of course, our music director is Austrian. I'm Canadian, as was my predecessor. Don't hold that against me. And but that gives you a sense of the orchestra. Even the board, you know, on the board of trustees, which is not as diverse, we still have trustees who were born in Israel, in China, in Japan, in Germany, in Austria. So this is truly a global institution. And that's very important for us. We're very proud of that, obviously, as we are of being in Cleveland. But it's also very important in attracting musicians. You know, for many people around the world, when I travel, and I'm sure many of you travel as well, you would have experienced that many people who've never been here really know of Cleveland because of a handful of institutions. And the Cleveland Orchestra is at the top of that list, along with the wonderful museum and, you know, perhaps Cleveland Clinic. I mean, if you exclude the sports team, you're really talking about a few institutions. And we take this very seriously because we believe that we represent the very best of Cleveland and of this region. And we also believe that this orchestra is one of the great orchestras in the world because it is from Cleveland, that what this community has brought to this orchestra over a century, the way it has built and supported this orchestra, is really what makes it unique. You know, if you compare it to places like New York or Chicago or Berlin, the musicians in this town have a place that is really unique in terms of who they are in the community, how people know them as neighbors, as community contributors, and et cetera, et cetera. And that makes this a very attractive place for people who come here. There is a certain sophistication about this wonderful community that really attracts players. As we know, it's a very cosmopolitan city for its size. And musicians who come from, you know, who come here to audition because it's the Great Cleveland Orchestra and then discover the community later on, really quickly love this place because of, as we were talking about recently, you know, the combination of the incredible quality that we have in this community and the accessibility of that quality for everybody. So that's on the kind of, you know, permanent team, if you will, level, musicians and staff and all of this. Then on a weekly basis, we have at least one guest artist, either a conductor and or a soloist, who typically will come from anywhere around the world. You know, it happens that it's from this country at times, but it's really the way we select soloists and guest conductors, it's really based on who's the best out there that we want to see. So to give you a sense, since January only, we've had perhaps 8 weeks of concerts. You know, we've had conductors born in Sweden, in France, we've had soloists born in Japan, the wonderful Mitsuko Uchida, many of you know her, who's been a regular here for 30 years, I think. And I just, you know, I could go through the list. We've had some of the very foremost composers of our time, Tom Addis, you know, from the UK, John Adams, the sole American that I will name over the past 2 months, people like Richard Deutsch, who's German. So I could keep going, you know. So this is our world. And as president and CEO, I spend really as much time traveling outside the country for the orchestra than I spend traveling in the country, because that's just the world that we evolve in. Really for us, a lot of the challenge, if you will, is not so much how to leverage, you know, the orchestra to attract people, because it's there, you know, we need to keep it going, obviously. But it's really more how do we use the orchestra to showcase Cleveland, you know, because in many cases, you have people like me who, you know, before I was asked to apply for this position and was recruited, I really didn't know anything about Cleveland. You know, I knew, again, typically, I knew the museum a little bit, I knew the clinic, and I knew the sports team. And I would say I'm fairly typical of people who have never been here. I lived in New York, I was in Melbourne, Australia, I'm from Montreal, you know. And Cleveland, I really didn't have an opinion. And then you come here and you discover this incredible place. And I'm really trying to take this experience while I remain somehow a little bit objective 6 years after I arrived, to really promote that this our great city when we tour the world. And I know, you know, certainly the museum does the same thing. We'll hear more about it. But we think we have a responsibility to promote this incredible community all over the world as we tour. And that's really a lot of what we focus on.
I think Destination Cleveland should have you on its payroll. That was quite eloquent and well put. I think we all share your sentiments. So then looking, when the orchestra goes abroad, obviously, for all of its tours, and we know that it has a residency program, there's a lot of close relationships with Lucerne and Vienna. Can you sort of share some details of how, maybe perhaps in some countries where there's not so much of an established or an unexpected relationship, how does the orchestra go about building that relationship with host institution and foreign audiences?
You know, not surprisingly, it's about people. So I spend a lot of my time meeting with these people. It's like, and it's also been interesting to see the impact of that during the pandemic. Clearly, we lost all of this. And as I was back in Europe for the first time last summer, and I am going again next week, you really realize what you've missed. You know, there's something you just cannot get on Zoom, especially as you establish these relationships. And you want to differentiate yourselves from Berlin and Chicago and New York and Vienna. And a lot of that is obviously the orchestra, but it's also the people around the orchestra. So I was on the phone with Prague this morning, for example. We're going there in September. I'll be there next week. You know, you make sure to show up. And so people remember that you're interested, because it's easy. You know, even though you've been famous as an orchestra for a long time, it's easy for people to forget about you. So a lot of my time, and obviously Franz Welser-Mörs, when he guest conducts orchestra, is to be there and remind them of what's happening now, right? Not what was happening 60 years ago with George Sell, which was wonderful, but it's really different what's happening now, to remind them of who we are now. And to remind them, of course, of what's happening in Cleveland. And this is where the work we do with digital and streaming, you know, that we started more recently, becomes really important. It's an additional tool to show up, if you will.
Just to follow up, are there different ways to build that relationship with foreign audiences that you found versus building with the community here?
It's really interesting. Audiences are different. You know, we were in China for the first time. One of the first things I did when I got here 6 years ago was to organize a China tour. The Cleveland Orchestra had been to China only once in 1998, which might have been, you know, 200 years ago as far as China is concerned. So we were really truly the last great orchestra to go to the new China. And to give you a sense, we played, I think, in 13 venues. Only one of these venues existed when we had tour 21 years earlier. So there was an incredible enthusiasm from the Chinese audiences. And really, it's a different reaction than what we get in Vienna, you know, and from the kind of mundane, you know, superficial aspect, like, you know, in Vienna people don't stand up. In Cleveland, you would see these standing ovations routinely. In Vienna, they won't. They'll start stomping their feet and all of this, you know. And so these things are interesting because they are, you know, they show some different cultural traits. But what's universal is how people react to the music. And that's, you know, to go to the core of what we're discussing today, the way that the orchestra is able to bring people together, whether it's in Cleveland with people from different, you know, spheres of life, or whether it's in China or in Japan or in Germany, I think that's the really interesting part, because that's a universal language that brings people together. And, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that we can bring world peace here, but I do think that we have a small and important role to play in reminding people that they have more in common than they have differences. And I think very few things can do that. You know, art can do that, music can do that, and perhaps sports at a certain level, but I don't think it's quite the same.
Competition in sports, although... but then moving to more arts, Heather, you know, the Cleveland Art Museum is also a world-class institution, and it distinguishes itself, at least in the Cleveland community, by bringing these incredible exhibits that bring pieces of art from all over the world. And I was wondering if you could kind of share with us a sense of the scale of the collaboration that it takes to put together some of the exhibits that I've had the pleasure of seeing, including most recently the Revealing Krishna exhibit, which was absolutely extraordinary.
Absolutely, Karina. It's a great question to ask because it touches on some of our most important values at the museum. We want people to feel that the museum is very much a place for them, and we want to continue to enliven the cultural milieu in Cleveland by bringing art from around the world to Cleveland, which in turn reflects the encyclopedic nature of the Cleveland Museum of Art's collection. So you mentioned two fairly recent exhibitions that were major international loan shows. Both of these, as well as many others, were many years in the making and are part of a bigger picture of collegial relationships that we forge around the world with other museums and with lenders around the globe. Our collection and our colleagues are what make cultural exchange possible for us. So you mentioned, we were talking earlier, and you mentioned Painting the Modern Garden, Monet to Matisse, in 2015-16 was the first exhibition you saw when you moved to Cleveland, Karina. And that was the first exhibition that we organized at CMA in partnership with the Royal Academy of Art in London. We have gone on to have a fruitful collaboration and partnership with them. We've also co-organized Picasso on Paper with the Royal Academy, which that presentation of that exhibition was postponed in Cleveland because of the pandemic. But don't worry, you will see it here in 2024-25. We will bring it, we will reconstitute it and bring it here so you can see that show. But Painting the Modern Garden was one of our most popular exhibitions in recent years. It had over 125,000 visitors, which for us is very robust. There were more than 140 paintings in the exhibition, and it occupied both of our lower level special exhibition spaces, which occupy more than 13,000 square feet. So it was a big, big show. There were nearly 50 international lenders. So that's a lot of lenders to keep track of, write letters to, persuade to lend, from 15 different European countries, including Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Switzerland, Germany, France, the UK, Hungary, the Czech Republic, and Russia also lent to the London venue of that exhibition. So such ambitious loans of paintings by Monet and his contemporaries require a lot more than just a little letter that you drop into the mail saying, hey, we're organizing this great exhibition. Wouldn't you like to part with your great Monet painting for a period of time? No, in fact, what you were saying, Andre, resonated with me because it's all about relationships and personal visits. These are curator-to-curator conversations, sometimes director-to-director conversations, in person. One needs to get on an airplane and travel to wherever you are hoping to borrow from and talk about your exhibition, make a presentation, and persuade that museum or private collector that your project is worth lending to. They will not have their painting on their walls for a period of anywhere from 4 to 8 months, and they need to feel like the reason for doing that is significant. So these are all relationships forged over many years. Having the Royal Academy of Art in London as a partner was incredibly valuable because, of course, many people saw the exhibition in London, but also because we had a London-based co-curator, and she could make a lot of the trips around Europe, and we then undertook a lot of the travel around the United States. Of course, we traded some of that, but that helped us to keep the budget under control, because you can imagine making all of these trips really adds to the expense of the project. I should speak a little bit about Shinto. Discovery of the Divine in Japanese Art, that was an exhibition that took place in 2019. And that was, as you would expect, entailed a robust collaboration with colleagues in Japan. If you saw that exhibition, you may recall that there were many paintings, sculptures, manuscripts, etc., on loan from Japanese museums, but as well as shrines and religious places. So we got to show our Cleveland audiences objects that they could really never see, even if they were to travel throughout Japan, Kyoto, Tokyo, and beyond. The ability to share the tenets of the Shinto religion with an American audience and give it context and thereby to tell a compelling visual story necessitated years of negotiation with our Japanese colleagues. In that exhibition, there were 75 works of art, but 20 of those works of art carried the designation of important cultural properties, and they are almost never allowed to travel outside of Japan. So it was the relationships built with our Japanese colleagues that predate my 20 years at the museum, in fact, go all the way back to Sherman Lee and many, many generations of a relationship with Japan, because they recognize the importance of the Cleveland Museum of Art's collection of Japanese art, but also the respect for what the museum has become in subsequent generations. And I'll give you a little tidbit of what was necessary, not just in the human-to-human conversations, but in the technological and conservation realm. We, in order to borrow some of these very fragile works of art, we had to work out a way for our cases in which certain objects made of wood or paintings on silk or paper could maintain a climate whose temperature and humidity was higher than that of the surrounding gallery. So there was a microclimate within those cases that was maintained through, frankly, months and months and months of research and testing and investment in technology. So we could not have secured those loans without all of that work. So it's multifaceted, these kinds of relationships and bringing the kind of art we aspire to bring to Cleveland. I'll pause there.
Well, that's great, because my next question, this is how the Cleveland Museum of Art brings all of this art to Cleveland, but also the Cleveland Museum of Art gives back. And one story that struck me from the recent Revealing Krishna exhibit was the story of the restitution of the Hanuman statue. And so I was wondering if you could talk about the leadership role that the CMA is playing in making sure that art is given back to communities of origin and how we provide technical assistance and support in places overseas.
Of course, that's a really hot topic today, the restitution of works of art to source countries. Some works of art in museums have gotten there through a long story and path. The history of the ownership of a work of art is known as its provenance. And as you probably know, in 2015, the CMA voluntarily transferred ownership of a very important Cambodian stone sculpture called the Hanuman, or the monkey god, the Hindu monkey god, that had been in the Cleveland Museum of Art's collection since 1982. It was a greatly beloved object by Clevelanders and school groups. Many children adored that object. But we undertook a great deal of research because we began to wonder about how that particular sculpture had come to have left Cambodia. And so our curator at that time, she is still with us, Sonia Ree Mace, we took a mold of the bottom of the sculpture. And she took that with her. She traveled to Cambodia and literally traveled all over the country trying to match the base of our sculpture with the bases of now missing sculptures in Cambodia. She undertook a trip of many weeks and literally was I think, you know, hot and dusty and stopping by the road at every possible place she could find. At the end of that trip, she did not find a match and thought, okay, it doesn't seem like the sculpture was removed and broken from its base. However, we didn't give up. And there was an excavation in, I want to make sure I get this right, at the east gate of the Prasat Chen Temple, which is part of the Kokare archaeological site, that was underway, and her trip had preceded that excavation. So when that excavation happened on the east side of the site, she had already checked the west side, it was discovered that there was a base there that was thought perhaps to match ours. That, and indeed it did, she traveled back and looked, and that combined with the fact that the excavation uncovered fragments that matched details on the Cleveland Hanuman, including an earring missing from the Hanuman, and the right side of that sculpture's head, pointed, of course, to the fact that it was very likely illegally removed during the Cambodian Civil War. So we voluntarily returned the sculpture to Cambodia in 2015. Now, every ending is a beginning, right? So the end of the Cleveland relationship with the Hanuman sculpture was the beginning of a deep and profound relationship of the Cleveland Museum of Art, and thus I would argue the city of Cleveland, with the Kingdom of Cambodia. And they were, you know, very, very delighted to have that sculpture back in their country once again and on view. And at that time, we began to forge a relationship of cultural exchange in which we exchange expertise, knowledge, technological advancements, and we began studying our Krishna sculpture, which was the subject of a very recent exhibition that just closed in Cleveland. And that is the study of a different sculpture, a 1,500-year-old sculpture of the Hindu god Krishna, who as a boy saves his village from a flood. And there is also a Cambodian version of that same sculpture in Phnom Penh. And through years, literally, of exchange and dialogue and visits from one museum to the other, it would take me all evening to tell you the entire story, but you can read it in the catalog that we published. Various fragments of limbs from both of those two Krishna sculptures have traversed the world, and the sculptures have been taken apart and reconstituted with limbs traded back and forth, and now both sculptures are thought to be as close as possible to their original states, both, of course, still missing certain fragments. So that's just one example of the collaboration that has been an outgrowth of the return of the Hanuman, and it continues in other projects and future projects.
So
certainly something Cleveland can be very proud of. So turning back to music, Yaron, I was wondering if you could talk a bit about your work at Piano Cleveland. I mean, this is obviously another Cleveland institution that brings international talent to Cleveland to compete in the competition. And I was wondering, sort of sharing, you know, how does your international background help you leverage the international reputation of the competition, and what does that bring to the table?
Well, so, that's loud. I'll start with the first part of your question, which is about Piano Cleveland. So most people know us as the presenters of the Cleveland International Piano Competition, which has already, which began in 1974 as the Cassatus Who Competition in collaboration with with CIM, and became renamed the Cleveland International Piano Competition in the 90s. And I think since the very beginning, the competition has made a reputation for itself of attracting the top young pianists out there to compete in the world. Some of our winners already, since it was the Cassatus Who Competition, include artists such as Angela Hewitt, as Jean-Yves Thibaudet, and so forth. And then in the 2000s, we started our collaboration actually with the Cleveland Orchestra in the finals, which is something we're very, very happy and proud of. And I can say that I was a finalist and a winner of this competition in 2007. And I can say that for a young artist, in my early 20s, to perform as soloist with the Cleveland Orchestra, this was really a very, very memorable experience. So I think that despite the fact we're a smaller organization, of course, than the Cleveland Orchestra or the Cleveland Museum of Art, we are really striving to achieve that same excellence and attract that kind of top level of music. And in our competitions, which take place about once every 3 years now, we attract the young pianists from all around the world. Only in the last competition, despite COVID, we had over 250 applicants from more than 40 countries. And I can just tell you that when I was living in China before, that will connect to the next part of the question, as I was applying for my artist visa on the website of the Chinese government, in order to get that visa, I needed to be a winner of one of 10 international piano competitions, and the Cleveland International Piano Competitions was one of those written in Chinese on the website of the Chinese government, and that allowed me to. So this is sort of how far the reputation of the competition goes. I think naturally, because of the nature of it being a sort of a piano organization, this is a very, very well-known piano competition internationally. Sometimes, and when I came here to become the president in 2018, I was somewhat surprised that something I knew since I was very young is something that a lot of people in Cleveland do not really know about. And this is really something that we have doing a lot of work in order to change. We like to call it the best kept secret in Cleveland, because really this event is presents some of the best young artists out there. So we've really, in recent years, we've expanded our activities beyond the competition only. And now we have a yearly program that we're doing. So as you mentioned, as Jenny mentioned at the beginning, we are presenting a piano festival, piano in its different forms, this summer, presenting some wonderful performances of piano, not only classical music, but piano in its different forms. We're bringing Igudas Manunju, who are like the new Victor Borge, and we have recitals of Michelle Kahn. We have a piano truck, who are two people who travel on a truck that opens to a stage and will perform for free in different areas in the city, including neighborhoods. And actually, there's a lot of information. Emily, who's our education arts coordinator, has all the information, so we're very happy to share that with you later on. And we have, of course, a lot of education. We just had a wonderful event at the Cleveland Museum of Art last week, the Carnival of the Animals, which was in collaboration with the Cleveland School of the Arts. Incredible, incredible. I know a couple of you have been there, and it was a really moving performance. And so I think we're also really focused on the future of musicians, not only around the world, but also in Cleveland, building all sort of music programming, hoping that we are able to have participants and winners from Cleveland and from Ohio in our competitions in years to come.
If it makes you feel any better, Cleveland Council on World Affairs is also one of Cleveland's best kept secrets, so you're in good company. and then perhaps for both you and Bishara, Tell us about the experiences and the intent behind Dua Amal.
Well, after, I mean, they express themselves so beautifully in English. My English is not so good, so I'll try to pass the energy at least. Our experience is really great. We have fun everywhere we go, and we try to experience the place, the people, the audience, as you said about the culture. Each culture reacts differently. Of course, each audience has their own opinion about anything. And we perform to everybody. Like, I mean, today morning we performed for kids. So we performed all over the world, in China, Japan, Korea, Asia, Europe, and United States. And we enjoyed it very much so far.
And, you know, sort of the intent behind this message of hope was to use music to show that you can bridge divides. And so how did this idea germinate? How was your partnership established?
Well, to be honest, Yaron was invited for a peace concert, and he was asked to give an idea what could be in the concert. And he said, I know this guy. We were not friends or something. So he called me. He got my phone and called me and said, yeah, why not? And I went to Norway, Oslo, and we rehearsed. We had one day to rehearse. We rehearsed, and it was so good that we both didn't believe that, because basically in chamber music, it's very hard to connect, even with great musicians. It's very hard to connect immediately, to have a mutual language, I mean musically. So it connected very well. The concert went well. Everything was great. So we said, let's try it some more times. And after a few concerts, like we didn't even start to really perform. We got agency. We got so we started to think what kind of message we want to say, want to pass. So we came with the name Amal, which is hope. I'm not sure it's the best name, but it's the message we are trying to pass.
It's a pretty good name. Yeah, Yaron, do you want to share your experience?
Yes, I will just say that I think that what does really, I mean, Bashar and I have been playing together for almost 15 years now, and we were also living in different parts of the world at the same time. We lived in Berlin together, even in the same building. And we used to have not only performances that we really traveled and played in a lot of places, but I think that kind of, for me before growing up in Jerusalem, Israel, I didn't really speak to anybody who's Arabic before, who spoke Arabic. And yes, we know there is something in Israel. It's very funny because as performers, at least me as a performer, I traveled all around the world, played everywhere, but I haven't been on the other side a 10-minute drive from my home in some places. And I think that this was back when we lived together in Berlin. We had months and months of conversations, sometimes until 5 in the morning, sometimes arguments, sometimes... And we really bonded on a level that now I can... very confidently say that Bashar is one of the closest people I have to me, and I think, will you say the same or no? He might be, maybe not. yeah. I think that unlike, and you know, there's a lot of projects of to peace, of bringing people together. For us, it's primarily about the friendship. You know, us as just as two people, and we hope and believe that it shows also when we play.
So I want to make sure we have plenty of time for all of your questions, but I will pose one last question to the entire panel. Maybe we'll start with you, Bashar. But what would you like to leave our audience with in terms of your views on Cleveland institutions building these international bridges, and what impact do you think this has? Why does this matter? Why is it important to you?
Well, I must say it's amazing. I mean, you really have one of the best orchestras in the world. I totally agree with that. I'm a musician and I can confirm that. And I was living in Berlin, and I heard the Berlin Philharmonic every second week, and they are considered one of the best as well. And it's amazing. I mean, it's it must be because of the community, of the people, of the I cannot say I'm not from here, but there must be something really good going on here. And the Cleveland competition is one of the most renowned, yeah. I don't know about the museum, sorry. I mean, it must be something amazing that you, all of you are doing. So respect, that's what I have to say.
Well, I think on behalf of all of us, thank you, because Bshara is actually visiting for the second time in Cleveland, or third time here. And we've been here a little bit longer, but I can really say that because when you travel around the world, not a lot of people know about Cleveland. And then when you come here and you, I think, see, first of all, when you go to the Cleveland Museum of Art, and you see that it is one of the most incredible museums that there are in the United States, if not in the world, with all the exhibitions and all the artists that's presenting, and then of course the orchestra, which of course we spoke about. This is really has a great also potential of growth, because again, Cleveland, when we travel around the world, it's not necessarily the first city that people, oh, it's not Paris, it's not London, maybe not New York, but we have a lot to be proud of. And I think that these institutions, along with some others, of course, really are, as Andre said, really on the top of that. And we should be really proud, and we should keep promoting, keep presenting what these institutions have to offer in order to really raise the reputation of the city.
I think what the museum hopes to achieve in terms of bringing the world to Cleveland, and in a way bringing the world, the art of the world, to Clevelanders, is to help people understand one another and to discover things in other cultures, to find themselves at the museum. Cleveland is an international city. There people from all over the world living here. So we want every visitor to, if they wish to find themselves within our walls and our galleries and our collection, but also perhaps to be surprised and to find something that they never thought of that perhaps enables them to cross oceans and different worlds without ever leaving their city.
A couple of things. I believe that what we all do in the arts is very relevant in a world today where so many of the conversations are binary, where the complexity, and you know, we're talking about the Council of World Affairs here, the complexity of the world is very often overlooked, and you know, looking for quick answers to very difficult and complex matters. And I think whether it's music, whether it's art, I think we celebrate in our art forms the complexity of the human condition. And I think that's very powerful, and I think it's extremely relevant in addition to what we mentioned before, which is bringing the people together, you know. And on that second point, it's been really interesting for me to see in my short time here, we have a European advisory board, for example, where I've really worked hard to kind of have the trustees in Cleveland mingle with some of our trustees in Europe, you know, and people who really have very little in common on the surface, and how they have really benefited from getting to know one another. You know, with you know, Austrians who are really Austrians, you know, who in some cases have never been to America, you know, and people from Ohio in some cases who don't travel a lot, and it's been beautiful to see. And you can kind of start envisioning again, without being naive, envisioning that if we had more of this, what a difference this could be, you know. And you know, some of us, those of us who believe in the importance of travel, this is what we're talking about, you know, the exposure to different cultures and sharing meaningful human experiences around the art form. I think is incredibly powerful and cannot be underestimated. And then the last point, I said two, but I had 3 points. The last point I would make is more specific to Cleveland. And, you know, I would love for this, for all of you to take away perhaps from me the importance of promoting the arts in Northeast Ohio. You know, I think we do an incredible job in Cleveland in promoting what sports can do. And it's so important, and I think we should continue to do so. But I think sometimes it's we don't think of the arts as a competitive advantage for our region. And as someone who has lived around the world, as Yaron and Bimal have, you know, truly this is an incredible place by any standards culturally. And I feel we don't speak enough about this. And I've been trying really hard, and I will keep trying really hard with politicians and with anyone who will listen in Northeast Ohio, that we need to promote this. It's easy to take for granted for people who have been here all their lives, but I can assure you that there are very few places in the world, let alone places of this size, who have the quality of culture that Cleveland and Northeast Ohio have. So I would love for all of you to be my and our allies in promoting this. Thank you.
Well, for sure. And as a Clevelander, that was a feel-good conversation. Thank you so much. We have some time for some conversation. Would love to hear your questions and your thoughts. Microphone, right?
I'd like to just follow up from what you just mentioned. We all know and we hear a lot about Playhouse Square and the economic impact that it brings to the city. I don't know that I've ever heard the economic impact than any of your enterprises. I don't know that I've ever read that in the paper or heard that on television.
We need to do a better job. We did one 3 years ago, and we did put it out. That was the first time. We'll do more, but you're absolutely right. And that's something I've been pushing internally. We need to make the case economically. You know, we create jobs, we create business for a lot of places around here. And of course, tourism, you know, so that's absolutely, that's something I think you'll hear more about in the coming months even.
I might add that the Cleveland Museum of Art employs 400 people. And I think certainly, you know, we need to do more to describe our economic impact on the city and the region. But yes, and I think and hope that we are a tourist attraction. Certainly we try to get people who are coming to Cleveland for sporting events, perhaps something at the clinic, for families to come to the museum. But I think we can do more. It's important.
Yes, and if I may just add about the people who maybe come from outside and choose to live here, this is another very, I think, strong potential that there is with organizations as such. And if you look at pianist Sergei Babayan, who is a world-renowned pianist and won the competition and came and lived and moved to live here. So I think that with bringing in that kind of caliber of musicians or artists or any other profession, of course, my partner is doing her residency in the Cleveland Clinic here, and this is another wonderful institution that we have in Cleveland, and I think it's people can discover that actually Cleveland is a very livable place, and we should do whatever we can in order to attract international people to choose Cleveland as their place, as their base.
But just to close on this, Linda, I think it's a great point, because I think as arts institution, and certainly at the Cleveland Orchestra, I think we can do a better job at promoting this. You know, for example, there are still people who don't know that the Cleveland Orchestra owns Blossom Music Center, right? So if there was no Cleveland Orchestra, there would be no Blossom, there would be no Live Nation, and all these wonderful rock shows that people enjoy and pop shows in the summer would not be happening. So that's part of, I think, our narrative that we need to improve to make that that point here.
Hello, my name's Julia. I grew up on the east side, and lived in this very room for most of my middle school and high school life. So I'm very excited to be back here. But I just wanted to share that because of the vast cultural experience that existed here, it created an opportunity for me to travel in a way that my family never did. So I grew up, I grew up in Cleveland Heights to parents that had never been out of the country ever. And because of the rich culture here, I actually went to the piano competition with my mom when I was in high school as an audience member. But because of the rich culture here, there was so many other opportunities for the youth. We have so many youth orchestras here. It's insane. It's not just Koyo. It's also, there was, CMSS was a huge thing for me growing up. The Contemporary Youth Orchestra, the Cleveland Youth Wind Symphony, all of these things were here because of CIM, because of the orchestra and the people who had side gigs, you know? And I'm curious, because of that, I was able to go to Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Italy, Germany, Switzerland. Those were just on trips with the Cleveland Youth Wind Symphony. And that was something I never would have had and opened my eyes in a way I never would have experienced. And I'm curious if you all had similar opportunities as youths, and if you see that, I don't know if anyone's told you that kind of impact exists on the children in this area, but I'm curious how you're continuing to curate that experience, not just for people looking at Cleveland, but people who are here and can look outward.
That's a great point. I mean, the question it prompts for me, and that's something I've been thinking about for a while, and of course, resource is always the issue, but imagine if the Cleveland Orchestra could take on tour. You know, we tour at least once a year. If we could take, every time we go away, a group of children who would have otherwise no way to get out. You know, if we could fund that, if we could make that happen, where they could see the world with us, imagine what that would do, you know, because, I mean, I was in the same case as you were. It was music, in my case, that brought me to see the world, you know, and I think that's, so how could we expand that beyond, in our case, just a youth orchestra that does tour, you know, every 3 or 4 years? So that's, you know, in the list of several dreams I have.
Hi, a similar question following up on that. Like with Koyo, when they traveled to, bridges were built there in the European and the Chinese, and I know they're the junior, the competitions for the piano as well. So maybe could we talk about how those bridges are built for our youth in your and the museum as well? Thanks.
I think you're asking about what kinds of programs are there for young people at the museum? Yes, absolutely. Well, we have had in the past and are planning to again. COVID has been a bit of a stumbling block for our bringing in children from schools. But in the past, we have had programs where we would bring an entire grade. We would make sure, say, the entire third grade or second grade from all of the Cleveland Metropolitan School Districts come to the museum to experience the permanent collection or perhaps a special exhibition. And we also have programs where we make ticketed special exhibitions free for students and for people who might not be able to afford to pay a ticket. There are certain times during the run of the exhibition in which we enable people to come. I mean, one of the things I've wanted to be sure to mention this evening is that I'm always amazed that many people, I think Clevelanders, people who live in Cleveland and its suburbs, may not realize that the Cleveland Museum of Art is free. There is no entrance fee to the permanent collection. We charge for some special exhibitions, but we have over 20 exhibitions a year, and many of them are completely free of charge. You know, if I happen to take an Uber in the city, if my car's in the shop or something, I always ask the Uber driver, "Hey, have you been to the museum?" Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but often, you know, people may not realize the museum is free. A story that literally broke my heart in two pieces was I was chatting with a neighbor's sister when the renovation first was unveiled in 2013, or was it 2012? I think it was 2013. And the sister of the neighbor said, "Oh, I walked into that beautiful atrium and I just was, you know, dazzled by the space, and I wanted to see what the museum had, but I was too afraid to go in. I didn't want to get scolded for not paying for a ticket." And I thought, wow, we need to be better at messaging that this is a free museum, and please come on in, whoever you are, and take part in what we have to offer. How unique that is. And to help people appreciate the uniqueness of that. Thank you.
So, yeah, as I said before, I mean, we have Emily here who's responsible for all our education and outreach. So we have a lot of programs with inner city schools and after school programs that then we're actually developing them. And we have a lot, I won't mention now all of them, but really, really wonderful things. And one of the things that we are looking to develop more and hopefully already starting next year, other than, well, there are a couple of things, actually. First of all, we're going to do a piano lab that is basically in collaboration with several organizations here in the city, where there is going to be a teacher, there are going to be keyboards for kids in the inner city schools who are going to sort of like study the keyboard. We also have a piano donation program that basically brings pianos from homes or pianos that are not in use anymore to places that want them. And this is extremely important if somebody has a piano, by the way. And if you have a piano, you can talk to us after, but really to bring them to institutions or to private homes that need them, and we give it to them for a period of 3 years, and then based on if they continue, you know, really giving that kind of opportunity. And last thing I would just mention that is really in terms of like the growth, how we see things moving forward, is also really to try and have an exposure of local kids with these international kids, because we bring not only the people from the Cleveland International Piano Competition, but in 2019 and now coming up in 2023, we're going to hold an institute and a youth competition in collaboration with CIM. Over there, really, there are going to be kids 11 to 18, the best of the best in the world, who are going to come. And we are now working on finding the possibilities for local children to be exposed and to have the opportunity to meet these kind of people from other cultures who are really at the top of what they do already in such a young age. So we really believe that this is extremely important for the development also of the future of the city.
And briefly, I would just give the example for us. In 2019, when Koyo was touring in Europe, we had in the previous months some students from Linz University in Austria who came and spent at least a week, if not more, here. And then the kids, when our kids went there, they did the same thing and they played, you know, chamber music together. Which, you know, probably for most of them, it was the first time they were interacting with either an American student or an Austrian student. So that's one example.
With that, I hope you can join me in profusely thanking our panel for sharing their thoughts with us this evening. And we are going to...